I told my wife, and this is where I get to learn. And sometimes I'm pretty good, and sometimes I'm not so pretty good. But I told my wife in the beginning, I said, I don't want to say I love you forever. I just always want to behave in loving ways towards you. Which to me made an incredible difference. I have not always behaved in loving ways towards my wife, you should know. She'd probably be the first to tell you. But that was part of the commitment that I had in the relationship. And we made, when we took our vows, I said, nothing will be more important to me than our love and my love for you. Have I let things be more important? Sure. You know, like we're out of bread. How come you didn't think to get bread? You're at the store. How hard is it to get a loaf of bread? And in that instant, boy, there's no loving there. There's no relating there. Suddenly bread is this major concept that stands between two people who've chosen to live their life together, bring a newborn into the world, and I'm sitting there going, hey, bread! Well, silly me. That's where I either get to kick myself in the butt, do the thing that I always say, you go, the bad dog, sit and grovel, bang my head against a wall, you know, 50 times, feel guilty, feel horrendous, whatever, and then go, well, okay, you forgot the bread, so now I'm going to feel bad and then blame the other person for my feeling bad. Or go, wow, you know, that's not really how I intended to act. What could I do instead the next time? What do I need to do now? What I'm learning more about is eating crow. I'm getting better at it. I'm slow. I'm thick. I'm not necessarily the quickest learner in the world. You know, I'll go, sorry. You know I love you. But I didn't mean it. But I'm learning that's not the kind of communication that my wife would like, Carolyn would like. So I'm learning that I need to begin to let go of certain things and begin to communicate in the way that she needs to be communicated to in order to feel loved and to feel supported. We've talked about it for years. It's called the platinum rule in communication. The golden rule was do unto others the way you would prefer to be done unto. The platinum rule is do unto others the way they wish to be done unto. In other words, communicate the way they would like to be communicated to. That's the trick, that's the challenge, that's the lifelong learning opportunity that all of us have before us, is to realize, hey, if you make a mistake and you don't do it right, if you genuinely feel sorry, if you really apologize, if you go back, you can go back and say, I'm really sorry, I was a schmuck, I was dumb, I was stupid, I'm sorry, I apologize. Take it on yourself, and then do whatever you need to in order to repair it. So that what you hold most dear with the people who you hold most dear is preserved and is validated. Because I can tell you this, if you want to motivate people, you need to give them recognition and you need to give them validation. Validate them and recognize them. And as a communicator, if your focus is here on yourself and not on the other person, the ball is not in their court, the ball is in your court, and you cannot win with the ball in your court. And they will perceive it. During the time we're here, we're going to talk about a lot of principles. We're going to give you some hands-on exercises. We're going to have you engage in certain things. We're going to have you writing some things down, learning some language patterns, talking about state control, different things like that. Some of the things perhaps you've read about, or if you followed my work or listened to some of my tapes, or if this is the first time you're being exposed to me in this fashion, there's going to be a lot of stuff that we're going to be doing that I think you're going to really enjoy. You're going to take home. You're going to practice. You're going to do it. Because you know what? If you're a juggler, like I said, I could stand up here and I could give you the principles of juggling. In fact, maybe we could take somebody up here and in a short time, half hour or hour or so, we could get them to juggle three balls. Okay? Because you can do that now. Okay? In fact, there's an incredible book out called The Klutz Book of Juggling, which if you buy the book, you can learn to juggle in a very short period of time. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes. constantly. Constantly in my life. That's the good news. The better news is that if I become aware of the mistakes I make, there's something I can do about it. Sometimes that means an apology. It means going to somebody and being more tender and saying, "Hi, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that, and I apologize, and I'd like to be able to make it better. What must I do to make it better?" So a man named Fernando Flores, the name is not that important, but a number of years ago, he's actually not even a U.S. citizen, or he may be a citizen, but he wasn't born in this country, who began to examine the English language, said there's four things you can do in the English language. Four things and only four things you can do in English. Number one, you can make a request. Number two, you can make a promise. Number three, you can make an assertion. Number four, you can make a declaration. While all of those are very useful concepts, ones that we'll probably focus most on are the first two. A request. Consider this. I say, "I'm thirsty." Or I say, "Bring me some water. Could I get some water?" And somebody runs out, comes back, throws a bucket of water on me. Did I get my request? I got water, didn't I? They bring me a thimble full of water. Did I get my request? If they go, "Take me in the lake, throw me out in the lake," did I get my request? In other words, think about this. In the English language, we can make a request. "I want some water." Now, if I want to get water, I could say, "Could you bring me a glass of water, fill it 3/4 full, put 2 ice cubes in it, and leave it right here on the stool?" And that would make me really happy. If they're interested in fulfilling my request, they know exactly what to do, don't they? I'm not being ambiguous. I could say, "Bring me a glass of glass," not a plastic. This is the thing that's always confused me. If it's made of styrofoam, you call it a cup. If it's made of paper, you call it a cup. If it's made of plastic, you call it a glass. I've never understood that. It's kind of like I sit home at night and go, "You know, if you looked up redundant in the dictionary, would it say C, redundant?" You know, why is the word abbreviated such a long word? It makes no sense. The one that really gets me, though, is I sit home and I think, what if your legs bent the other way? You know, what if they bent out this way? What would chairs look like? They'd
be perches.
They'd be perches. Yeah, that's probably true. Anyway, the more specific I can be in my request, the more the other person has an easier job of fulfilling it, assuming that I don't go, "I'd like water from a crystal spring in the, you know, the mountains of the Adirondacks and blah, 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 you know, bring it to me," and this kind of thing. As long as I say, "I'd like a glass of water, fill it about 3/4 full, put 2 ice cubes in it, leave it on that stool in the next 5 minutes, they have the opportunity of being able to fulfill that, do they not? Now, guess what? Implicit in every request that you make is an implied promise. In other words, if they fulfill your request, you promise to be delighted because that's what you requested. They are meeting your need. They are taking time out of their busy schedule to do something for you because you had a request. So they bring you water. You go, "Yeah, okay, great." Are you fulfilling your obligation to the person? No. So if you make a request to somebody, you got to go, "Thanks," because implicit in that is the promise that I'll be delighted. I will be happy, I will be satisfied if you meet my request. That's why two of the magic words, "please" and "thank you," come in. There are many times that I've said to Carolyn or to somebody else, I go, "Could you do this for me?" They go, I go, "Great," and I walk off. And I don't stop and think and go, "Wow, that was really great. Thank you so much for doing that. You really helped me out here. That really made a difference in my life. I really appreciate that. Thank." In other words, think about it. Somebody goes out, brings me water, I go, "Thanks very much," and I go on. They're not getting recognition. They're not getting validation. And they aren't getting the promise that I'm delighted. So the next time I ask them to bring me some water, how inclined do you suppose they'll be? Or let's ask, how long before they decide to say, get your own water? Yeah, fairly soon. Because everybody wants to be validated. Everybody wants to know if they're going to help you out, if they're going to interrupt their schedule, if they're going to do something on your behalf, that they get something back in return. And sometimes a smile is enough, some kind of acknowledgement, thank you so much, I really appreciate that. That really helped me out, are going to be the magic words that allow you to have people continue to do things on your behalf. Carolyn and I came up one night, sitting at home, and I went, water? I'd love some water. Thank you. Out of the blue. Oh, you want some water? Okay, I'll go get some water. Go. Got me some water. That was really great. A night later, I go, ice cream? Oh, what a great idea. I'd love some ice cream. Thank you very much. Third night, you know, oh, wow, popsicles. Oh, I'd love popsicles. Could I have some? Oh, thanks. I'm glad, so glad you offered. Like the fourth night, Carolyn goes, ice cream, I'd love some ice cream. Uh-oh. This went on for, you know, like 2 weeks until we finally said, okay. You know, what was cute, and we both enjoyed doing it, but when overdone, it didn't have the same impact. So in the same way, if you make a request to somebody, realize that you're promising to be delighted. And so be delighted. Because when you are, when they are able to see you delighted and you acknowledge and you validate and you respect them in that fashion, they're going to feel more rewarded and more apt to want to do something for you to please you in the future. But they won't if you don't give them what they're due. And if you incessantly make demands of people. Now, these are things that you know, I'm beginning to learn in 20 years. Things that I am still working on, because there are going to be times when I'm busy and I go, get me that. Thanks. And walk off. Those are those magic moments where if you catch yourself not doing what you would know you should do or could do, that you then stop and say, oh, gee, I'm really sorry. That was really fantastic. Thanks so much, Paul. I really appreciate that you did that. And you acknowledge them. You take that time. You will increase your batting average. Because guess what? There's a couple of principles that are important that you should know and that you should write down. One is people like people who are like themselves. People like people who are like themselves. That means the more similar you are to another person, the more apt you are to have rapport. Or the more easily available it is for you to begin liking somebody. That's how people come together, actually. Some two guys are sitting in a bar and they happen to be talking about baseball and they find out that they both like baseball or they both like the same team. Suddenly there's something in common that they start talking about and boy, they kind of make a connection. They go home and go, hey, this is a great guy, man. He knows everything about sports. It's so cool. Because that's what their interest is. It could be any number of things, but the more that you're able to fashion yourself to be like another person, is the more you're able to connect with them. Now, this works on a subliminal kind of area. In other words, this is where the notion of body language and things that operate outside of consciousness come in, and we're going to practice some of those things. But it literally, the more that you're able to conform to another person's way of doing things, the more you're able to conform your body, your voice, the things that you do, the mannerisms you have to the way another person communicates, the more apt you are to score high points with them, to be able to connect in a powerful way with them. The second thing is the rule of reciprocity, and that is you do something nice for another person. Rule of reciprocity. Or, if you do something nice for another person, they will tend to feel obligated to do something nice for you. I've been teaching salespeople this for 20 years, and it's been going on since the dawn of humankind. Salesperson calls up on you and says, hey, I've got some toner cartridges I'd like you to see. Tell you what, let me take you out to lunch and we'll talk about it. You go out to lunch, they pick up the bill. Been great having you. Oh, how about these toner cartridges? What do you feel more inclined to do? Buy one. Or at least give them the shot. Because they've done something nice, or they've paid something, or they've taken you out to dinner. You all know that. I can remember being a bachelor in New York City. The whole thing was that the guys and girls would compete about dinners. Girls would call up the guys and go, hey, we're throwing a dinner. Come on over. Three or four of us would show up. They'd have this candlelit dinner. The skyline would be out there. They'd have music. They'd have crab, and they'd have lobster, and they'd have this, that, and the other thing, you know, and margaritas or whatever. Now it was our turn to outdo them because they had done this. It was an incredible kind of thing. And so then we felt like we had to top that, and it kept going into these kind of topping dinner things. But you invite somebody over for dinner, or they invite you over for dinner, what do you feel like you should do for them? Reciprocate. That's why it's called the law of reciprocity, or the law of reciprocal giving. So if you want to get people to do things for you, rule number one, do nice things for them. It's common sense. But sometimes we need common sense. We need to be reminded, do nice things for other people, and they'll feel like doing nice things for you. The ability to be an expert communicator means that you have the ability to essentially be a chameleon, to be flexible in your communication styles so that you can communicate with different people in different ways so that they feel truly understood and so that a connection can take place. That is the opportunity that exists for all of us, and that is we've all learned to communicate the way we've communicated. We have a history of what we've done in our past, and the opportunity exists for us now to learn to do new things, to add things into our behavioral repertoire to make us more successful and thus increase our batting average. Does this make sense?
Yes!
Now again, I come back to why I have you put your hand up. Because it shifts your body. It shifts the state of energy in your body. You go, yes, I understand. Two things happen. One is you make a vocalization. You make an utterance outside. You add credence to what you're thinking on the inside. If it makes sense, and you go, yes, it does make sense, realize that as you speak it, it becomes even more powerful. Thoughts, only thought, are not nearly as possible as those thoughts that are put into action and those thoughts that are expressed. Every one of these posters up here that you look at and go, wow, that's such a neat idea. What a great concept. I never thought about it. That's so cool. To enjoy enduring success, we should travel a little in advance of the world. If it hadn't been uttered, if it hadn't been expressed, if it hadn't been written, if it only existed in the mind of a thinker, it would never be actualized. So to be able to utter the kinds of things that you're learning, to make an expression, yes, I understand, to do nice things means to go first. If I want somebody to do something nice for me, I should do something nice for them. I understand that adds power. It's not any longer simply a thought inside your head. The other thing it does is when you go, yes, I understand, you change your breathing, you change your posture, you start to move things around inside your own neurology, because that's what you did as a kid. When you went out and you played as a child, you moved around, you stuck things up your nose, you ate everything, you rolled around, you did all this stuff. Your learning was not cerebral until you got to school. It was interactive with everything that there was in the world. And what happened in the school process was they put you in chairs, they said, you cannot move until we tell you to, and you must write these things down, you must read these books, and then you must answer correctly the test questions we give you in order to get a passing grade. And so it became a cerebral process. We now think that learning about things is the way we make change, and it is not. When they hook people up to CAT scans and PET scans and they tell them to read a book about riding a bike, the brain lights up in certain areas. And so they can record what areas of the brain are actually at work. And it is different areas when they actually go out and ride a bike. You cannot learn about something and expect it to transform you. But you can learn to transform your life by doing things. And so this is going to be an interactive program. I'm going to have you move your body in different ways. I'm going to have you practice different things. And so that's part of why I'll say, can you see what I'm talking about? And you go, yes! So I hope you play along. I hope you have fun. I hope you'll enjoy yourselves. And I'd like to share some other things with you. The first thing I want to share with you is this. And this is something, during the time that you're here, we're going to engage in a few rituals. Rituals are good things, okay? Like washing your hands before you eat is a ritual, okay, that hopefully you engage in. So in the same way, there are rituals for health. People get up, they spend time doing yoga, or they run, or they do some exercise, they do something for themselves. Maybe they spend some time on the computer checking their email, whatever it may be. But there are rituals that we have that we do on a daily basis every day, which can dramatically enhance the kinds of things that we do. And some of those I'd like to introduce you to this evening.
You
You have just completed this audio session. Please go on to the next CD.